Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in, everybody. It's time for KER Politics. Let me outline real quick the topics we're going to be talking about today in the show. Jimmy is going to be talking about Tucker Carlson's interview with the Capitol Police Chief Stephen Sund, which is a very interesting interview. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the Trump indictment for January 6th. And is that going to open up a lot of questions on voting in 2020? I think it should. What is the elitist political strategy to target Trump? Desperate, foolish, or sophisticated? We'll see what you guys think, and we'll see what we think about that. And then China corruption in economic growth that's really not nearly as big as they would like the world to believe, and we will explain why on that one. Jimmy, let's start out with an interview with Tucker Carlson.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting interview, and it's a very interesting story. It's a much bigger story than just the interview itself. So Tucker Carlson apparently had prepared an interview with the Capitol Police Chief, Stephen Sund, who was responsible from 2019 until, I think, the day after the January 6th, or a couple days after the January 6th, when he was kind of resigned or basically pushed out because of what happened. Now, in this interview, he talks of some pretty damaging statements, but this was recorded while Tucker was still a Fox News anchor or, you know, reporter.
Yeah.
And he did it for his daily, for his online, I guess, Fox Nation program that he had. This was getting ready to air on Monday, apparently, on Monday after they fired him. So they fired him potentially because of using this interview.
Wow.
Now, this is huge because this also, you know, goes to the whole Dominion case. When you think about the Dominion case and the fact that they, Fox News, settled out of court rather than actually standing up for the freedom of the press, and it shows some underlying decisions inside the Fox headquarters and board that are really apparently trying to cover up information that might make not only Fox look bad, but actually undermine some of the news media narratives on the 2020 election. So what Sun says in this interview, and there is a clip, the National Pulse actually has a 2-minute clip showing part of the interview. Apparently it's much longer, and we'll see more as it comes out. But Chief Sund, S-U-N-D, he claims that none of this would have happened if he were allowed to do his job properly.
Right, I noticed that.
And he says that Pelosi and General Milley actually withheld critical intelligence that would have helped him prepare more, that he got very generic information about problems, but they knew, and there was more information, that it might have been more problematic. He also says that they denied, that Milley and Pelosi denied the National Guard before the event. They did not allow him, even though they requested it, and he requested it, and then denied the National Guard response for up to 71 minutes when the riot started.
Yeah.
So he's claiming that all of this is a complete cover-up, that he was fired, that they are trying to silence people about what happened, and he's been basically derided in public over it, and he's actually publishing a book called Courage Under Fire. And it's about ready to come out, I guess, at some point. And I think this is kind of a watershed moment when you combine Fox News firing Tucker Carlson before he actually broadcast this interview, and you see what's happening right now with Jack Smith indicting President Trump, and then you look, remember how the entire January 6th Congressional Oversight Committee was put together in order to undermine the administration and did not allow any discussion or arguments countering their statements. They were very selective of who they put in, with the only Republicans being Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney on that committee, that were actually out to undermine the previous administration. So you add this all together, and it is clearly, it does look very much like a federally incited cover-up. And one of the other things, Al, in this discussion, Sund actually says that there were a massive number of federal implants inside the different, inside the rioters. There were a large number.
Let me stop you and ask you a question. What was the origin of those implants?
Well, we don't know for sure, but we do know that there were some FBI elements. We do know that there were potentially other intelligence operatives in there. There could have been, and probably likely, we do know from facts that there were D.C. police that were embedded with the rioters that were undercover. Yeah. And of course, you know, there's a host of other agencies that were probably involved. The U.S. Park Police, potentially other U.S. intelligence organizations, potentially even military individuals there. And I think they bring up in this discussion, so we've all heard about Ray Epps. Ray Epps was the guy that stood out there and incited people to break into, and of course, to break into the Capitol. He's out there yelling for it to happen, but he's never been indicted. And of course, the FBI came out and said that he wasn't an informant for them, and the DOJ said they weren't an informant for them. But what Tucker Carlson and Chief Sund kind of discuss, and this is a question, was he working for another agency, another federal agency? And that could have been, and Tucker implies that he might have been in military intelligence, so one of the military intelligence folks, or at least he asked that question. I don't know if he implies it, but he asked the question.
Jimmy, I want an opinion from you, and the reason I want that is you were in Army intelligence. You've got some acumen on this particular subject. Do you believe that statement that you just made?
So I do believe that because it was a national crisis, potentially, that there may have been other federal oversight agencies there. There were probably people that were there responsible. I mean, I just will tell you that there were probably some folks that were there in case there was a response and they had to know what was, you know, happening. The likelihood of that is the case. There are very strict rules that the Army certainly and most of the military intelligence people have to follow about reporting on U.S. citizens because of the Church Commission. And we don't know if there was something behind an executive order that might have someone might have circumvented those policies, or if there are some other agencies or some other intelligence operatives in there that had been given authorities through the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, which is ultimately would be Milley. And so we don't know exactly. It would have been a very high bar in order to put military intelligence folks in there. Is it possible? I think it's possible. Based on what I've seen right now with this government and with the Biden administration, with the people, I would not discount anything without I don't want to make accusations, but I certainly don't want to discount the possibilities of them circumventing the law. We're seeing it over and over.
Yeah, there are all kinds of possibilities out there. Jimmy, got to take a real quick commercial break. Ladies and gentlemen, we will be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in our next segment. We're going to talk about how the Trump indictment for the January 6th events is really going to open up a lot of questions on voting back in 2020. Jim, why don't you start us out on this one?
Yeah, so in that last segment, we talked a lot about the January 6th events and some of the things that Chief Sun, the Capitol Police chief at the time, was very upset about. He's a very articulate guy, and I recommend people find that video, and you're going to see more come out pretty quick. But basically, the indictment that he somehow was responsible, and he was given four charges from Jack Smith, that he was inciting the violence, that he was taking away people's freedoms, and that he was trying to obstruct an official proceeding, all depends on his state of mind, whether or not he believed there was a actual fraud in the election in 2006. And Jack Smith is saying, hey, he took away people's rights because he knew that he'd actually lost the election. Well, I'll say right now, Al, I still don't know if he lost the election. In fact, I believe that he didn't lose the election for a lot of different reasons.
And that's Donald Trump.
That's right. Yeah, I'm talking about Donald Trump. Yeah. So the indictment here attacks specifically his mental state. There is a lot of information out there that would actually bring questions to people's mind of whether or not this was a legitimate election. And we've seen the polling shift to where more Americans believe there were irregularities in 2020 than not. So it's over 55, I believe, 56% in the latest polling. Maybe it's 60%. It may be even increasing because of information. But what is very interesting about the Jack Smith effort is it, and this is pointed out by one of Trump's lawyers as they were, you know, facing the judge yesterday in D.C. They get to actually do discovery now for the first time. Remember, there were multiple lawsuits filed against the 2020 election, but the media pressure, the administration, the incoming Biden administration, basically the swamp in D.C., Bill Barr even, many of them were pushing this agenda that you can't question the election. And because of that, and because the election was over, many of these court cases did not go forward. They were denied.
Right.
But here's the dilemma for the Justice Department and Jack Smith. When he actually filed these charges, they now have, the Trump team, the lawyers, now have an opportunity not only to prove the idea that Trump was in fact convinced or at least thought that he actually had lost the election, but they also have the opportunity to go back and question specific things about the election and bring them to the public forum, which is actually, when you look at some of the factors there, a lot more people are unaware that there were very significant questions and legitimate questions, and in fact some court cases have shown there were legitimate questions in some of the states. So it's a dilemma for the Justice Department and Jack Smith.
Well, it really is. Now, I know the Trump administration also came out and did a big deal about that, saying, you know, we have really investigated this thing and there were no irregularities whatsoever in that election. Hang on a second. And they've pretty much convinced the public that that was the case, Jim.
You said the Trump administration. I don't think you meant the Trump administration.
No, I meant the Biden administration.
Right, the Biden administration. And the Biden administration has done this without allowing any counter arguments. So in the January 6th commission, in the actual impeachment hearings for Donald Trump, the second impeachment hearings, they did not allow any witnesses for the defense. So now the system is opened up. And let me give you five very specific areas that are going to be problematic for Jack Smith and the Justice Department and the Biden administration. First one, illegal drop boxes. In Wisconsin, the Supreme Court identified that there were illegal drop boxes with hundreds of thousands of votes that were put in these illegal boxes, but the difference in the election was only 21,000 votes in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That's how much Biden won by. So that is one specific area that they may have a problem. The second one, foreign interference. The Department of Justice has actually charged Iranian nationals with hacking an unnamed state. They don't know which state. We don't know which state it was, but a computer system, and then stole over 100,000 voter registration data information, and then targeted congressional Republicans and the Trump administration with negative information in order to try to shift the election. That's a fact by the Department of Justice.
Okay.
The laptop.
Yeah.
The laptop is a huge problem because the Justice Department, CIA, intelligence officials came out and said, hey, this was Russian disinformation. It turns out it was not, which is a clear lie. And most data points, there's been a lot of investigation that over 40% of Democrats had never heard of the laptop during the election. Had they actually heard about the laptop and had it been shown, and the FBI knew it was accurate, the intelligence community knew that it was actually true and it was Hunter Biden's, people actually would have not supported, Biden would have lost. So that's a third problem. The fourth problem.
And that's based on the laptop information, Jimmy?
Yeah, based on Hunter Biden's laptop, yeah.
Well, I'm very surprised that that book, whose author was a member of the staff at the of the other New York paper, I'm very surprised that that book didn't gain more traction.
Well, it's done really well. It has done really well, and now we're seeing the ramifications of that the truth that's come out with the FBI knowing that the laptop was there. So there is it's slowly working into the process.
Yeah. Well, the only comment I can make on that, Jimmy, is purely and simply, the laptop is being squelched very effectively to date by the Biden administration.
Well, they're trying, but they're having a tough time.
Yeah.
Here's a couple other issues they're going to face in court. Illegal exemptions for voter ID. Over 200,000 voters showed no ID, and this was actually in court in Wisconsin again. That's 10 times. Those are absentee ballots, no voter ID, 10 times the victory margin. And, of course,
right.
In Fulton County, there's over two dozen pages worth of voter problems. And the state actually wanted to take control of the voter apparatus in Fulton County because it was so failed. But then they overturned it by the vote over the kind of, I guess you want to, if you want to call it the Rhino Election Commission in Georgia. So it's a problem.
Yeah, it is. It is a problem. Jimmy, we got a break for the top of the hour news right now. You guys, we're going to be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Before we get into the third segment, which we're going to talk a little bit about the ask the question, was the elitist political strategy to target Trump desperate, foolish, or sophisticated? Before we get into that, though, we're going to talk a little bit about the Capitol policeman who wore a MAGA hat in an effort to try and rescue people. What happened to him? Jimmy, you're on, bud.
Yeah, so, you know, in the first segment we talked about Chief Sund and his, you know, saying, hey, there's a cover-up going on here. And if you remember, it's been kind of forgotten, but Tariq Johnson, he was a Capitol Police lieutenant. And he put on a MAGA hat and went in to try to, you know, pull out some cops that were trapped and got actually some of the people that were there involved in the protests. He got them to help him. But he was suspended for it. Now, he was actually interviewed by Tucker Carlson, but he's come out now. And interestingly enough, he's saying he did not want, he was very concerned. He's a lifelong Democrat. He's a you know, black Capitol police officer. He put this MAGA hat on as a ruse to try to help these people. And when he talked to it with Tucker Carlson, he was afraid, didn't realize how bad things were, and didn't want to tell everything because he felt like Tucker Carlson wouldn't believe him. Now he's coming out and saying, in a tweet, basically on X, he's saying that the deputy police chief, Yogananda Pittman, actually helped coordinate some of the confusion to support Nancy Pelosi and General Milley to ensure this was a more dangerous riot. And he's making that accusation, but said, hey, I didn't think anybody would believe me, so I was afraid to say it, but now I'm coming out and saying it. And this is pretty, again, when you tie this into everything else that's going on with January 6th, with the Jack Smith indictments, with what's going on with Mar-a-Lago, and what those documents were that Donald Trump kept, you're looking at a full-scale, all-out effort to try to silence and to protect and cover up the corruption inside Washington, and with not only Department of Justice, but with the Biden family and, of course, Nancy Pelosi and the entire deep state apparatus. And it's becoming, it's actually kind of hard to stomach and watch, but it's becoming quite apparent that that's what's happening.
Okay, you want to get into the third subject, Jimmy?
Yeah, sure. So, and we also talked in the second segment about the indictment. And here's a couple other things that are going to... So True the Vote, those are the people that went around and did the collected the mobile phone data and tracked people that did multiple drops at ballot boxes. That's going to be up now to help Donald Trump's defense. They're going to be able to provide that information, and someone will have to discredit it. And they're going to be able to do it through subpoena. The Trump team will be able to do subpoenas and discovery, and they're going to go ahead and have witnesses to support some of these questions. Also, the federal actions on Connect. So Connect was a data collection service, and True the Vote had accused them and provided information that they were actually sending voter registration data back to China. And that information was initially charged by the LA District Attorney Gascon's office, but then dropped on pressure probably from outside in DOJ, again showing a connection with China. That will come up in this. And Connect, remember, filed a lawsuit against True the Vote. True the Vote then released their data online, and everybody saw it, and immediately Connect dropped, the next day they dropped the lawsuit because it didn't show factually that they were shipping data to China. Now, all this wraps into, what is the political strategy? What is going on in D.C. with the DNC, with the Rhino Republicans, the Mitch McConnells, the Paul Ryans, the Mitt Romneys, as well as the kind of progressive aggressive team and the globalists and the media? How are they, what's going on behind the scenes? What are they trying to do? And I think the question is, are they just attacking, just all out attack to destroy Trump? That seems to be backfiring, not working very well.
Well, it may not be, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, yeah. Go ahead, Al.
It may not be working very well, but the thing that I find to be interesting, very interesting, Jimmy, is that none of this material that you're discussing here is being talked about at all in the press. So the American public has no idea what your thoughts are.
Right, but all this is factual information. And
I'm
what
not
is,
saying...
And this is,
I'm
no,
not
no, Al, listen, listen. What is going to be really important is when actually Trump goes to trial, he's going to present his defense, which makes this information become public.
Yeah.
You see how important that will be?
Of course.
And so, and some people are saying, hey, look, this is a strategy. Certainly a lot of people on the conservatives that don't like Trump, they're saying, hey, this is a strategy by the Democrats because they want Trump to be the nominee because they know they can beat him. And you know what? I don't really buy that because they just don't have that much control. And I also don't think that Biden is going to be capable of beating anybody. So that means that they're going to have to put somebody else in, like Newsom or somewhere else. And then I really, truly believe this is more of a cover-up of corruption. But it's getting so deep. They're doing so many things to try to stop the flow of information that eventually the dam's going to break. And they can't get out of it. It's almost like a child when they just, no, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. But they're actually holding the rock that they broke the window with in their hand. There's going to be a really tough opportunity. The problem is exactly what you say, Al. Ultimately, it's about the information. Do people have the information to make decisions and understand what's happening? And that's what the media is doing to help protect the Biden administration and the Department of Justice.
Yeah, well, that's a pretty stout defense, I have to say, for the current administration. Jimmy, you had quite a number of things you wanted to talk about on this segment. You might want to decide how you want to combine it with the final segment, because we've only got a minute and 30 seconds left in this particular segment.
Sure, yeah, and I think I touched on most of the things, but you know, there's another possibility of the strategy here. I mean, I don't think the strategy is sophisticated. I think that it's actually, now it's a sign of more desperation.
Uh-huh.
And this is really becoming a Hail Mary from overzealous and incompetent young radicals on staffs in the White House and inside the DNC and inside Justice Department to think that they can keep pushing. They're believing their own rhetoric. They can continue to push these agendas and people, they'll just be successful, and they've got the support of the media, they've got the support of donors, and they've got these big organizations and structure, and they do have a very strong influence structure out there, and that'll protect them.
Yeah.
But I don't.
I think it will protect them, because anybody who's writing a big check to the Democratic Party is firmly convinced that their philosophy is correct. I mean, money really talks, and so I'm sure a lot of those people are totally, totally convinced that the Democratic philosophy is correct, and that the Republican or conservative philosophy is full of holes. I don't know, the election's going to kind of put some light on it. I got 30 seconds, Jim.
Yeah, I don't even think it's, actually people aren't even thinking anymore. It's just a matter of what they're being told. They don't really think, they don't critically think, they don't look at these issues. But when they do wake up to what's been happening and what was the influence over COVID and how that impacted the elections, when they impact the border issues and the crime and all those things, they have to question what's happening, the economy. So
yeah,
I'm quite confident.
They do, Jimmy, but we have to take a real quick commercial break. You guys, we're going to be right back. We're going to wrap up KER Politics. We're going to talk a little bit about how China is, I'll use the word, goosing their numbers in terms of economic growth. They have a couple of plans, a couple of strategies in place that are so far being very, very effective. One of them has to do with bicycle production, and the other one has to do with electric vehicle production. Boy, if you look at those numbers, they are huge when it comes to input into the concept of the Chinese economy growing. And I got to tell you, all you have to do is watch a couple of videos that I can post on this website if you guys would like me to. Jimmy, can you explain?
Yeah, you bet. So there's the videos are really, really interesting. No place to place. No place to place part two. Those two videos show some unbelievable levels of malfeasance in the Chinese economy. The first one, No Place to Place, actually shows the efforts between about 2015 to 2018 to stimulate shared bicycle programs in China. And basically, the government subsidized the development of China's bicycle industry in order to convince people to share bicycles. That started a basically a Ponzi scheme or a pyramid scheme to bring investors into big corp into these corporations that are producing bicycles, and they just kept feeding this flow for this massive massive production of bicycles. So what this video shows, what No Place to Play shows, is the ramifications of that in 2018 when the basic production of the bicycles stopped because there was actually no market for them. There are millions, tens of millions of bicycles stacked up in different parts of every major urban area in China, in every city, where they're just brand new bicycles stacked up in, I mean, literally in massive piles. You can't even, and these are all brand new. They were all produced, but they were produced by incentivizing corruption with investors pouring money into these programs. The people are running away with the investment money, and then the companies collapse. And apparently there's only two left after really a massive increase of them. And of course, that now has spread to the subsidized EV development market in China.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the electric cars. The same thing is going on there.
Right. And so the second movie, No Place to Place 2, it's about 2.5 minutes long, and I really recommend you take a look at it for all the listeners out there. Basically, it shows, again, thousands, if not tens of thousands, of electrical vehicles that were produced with these subsidies. And basically, not just subsidies, but these massive investment schemes to bring people in to invest in the development of the EVs. But there's no market for them. So what they're doing is they're leaving these vehicles all over in huge, massive parking areas just to rot, just to rot. And so you're talking about massive environmental impact for the actual mining of the lithium in the different parts for the electric batteries, and of course the gas, glass, the rubber, the metal that was used, and all the electronics that are used for these vehicles, not only in the mining effort, but now they're just sitting in piles, rotting away. And the videos are interesting because there's nothing said. They're just basically a couple of people that got out with basically drones and filmed these massive stockpiles of bicycles and unused EVs that were not only were they produced, but they were also, they're licensed, because in order to get the subsidies, they had to actually sell them. So the companies would, with the investment money, they'd go ahead and license them. They've got tags on them, but then they just park them because there was really no purchase of them. So again, when you're talking about this level of corruption and this these investment schemes, this will have a massive impact on the Chinese economy. And we know that the same thing has happened with commercial real estate development, apartment building, and these massive pushes into the urban areas around the country for decades. And it's really unsustainable.
Of course it's unsustainable. You gotta have customers to keep the factories going. There's absolutely no way you can avoid that particular action. And I am a little bit surprised, I have to say, knowing what I know about the Chinese mentality, I'm a little bit surprised that they are doing that. That it's pretty easy to have somebody come along with a camera, as this person did, and kind of very effectively blow the whistle on the scheme. So basically what that has to say is you have to be very careful when you are comparing economic growth, the size of economies, etc., between many, many nations. It's really true. I'm not surprised, I guess I have to take back something that I said earlier, I'm not really surprised that the Chinese did that, but it proves that their economy is not the fastest growing in the world and eventually will not be the largest economy in the world. Kind of a comforting thought for Americans, I have to say.
Well, I won't completely agree that they won't down the road push that type of agenda and be that economic powerhouse or military powerhouse. And the reason why is because without transparency, no one really sees this. And if it's a lot of corruption and you have basically an authoritarian government, they're never going to allow people to see this at any level, right? They'll do much to silence it and opposition. And of course, they'll attempt to control through whatever means necessary their industries. And they've got this quasi-capitalism going on, but it's really restricted by authoritarianism. So ultimately, they can still... They don't care about the public. They don't care about the consumer. What they care about is power and money. And that's what you're seeing right here. And this is the problem throughout the world.
Yeah.
It's the problem in the United States right now, the level of corruption with our different industries and our politicians. It's about money and it's about power. And, of course, as long as they can have the ability to silence that internally, domestically, they can care less what the rest of the world thinks. And I've got, you know, we only got a little bit of time here left, but I was reminded of of something I learned when I was in, you know, studying Soviet system and, you know, Russian and one of the nail factories, you know, they had a target, you know, the Soviet system was very difficult to get motivated workforces. And so they gave targets, the centralized authorities gave targets for, different production levels, and you had to meet them every year. So managers came up with ingenious ideas to meet the requirements. And one of them was a nail factory, and they had to produce basically, you know, like 100,000 tons of nails. They measured it by weight by the end of the year, and they were behind. So what did they do? They actually forged one giant 100,000 ton nail to meet their quota, and people signed off on it.
You gotta be kidding me.
No, and this happened.
Where did you read that, Jim?
Oh, this is something that I studied way back when, when I was in university and when I was in the Russian program. It's not unusual when you have command economies and you have authoritarian leadership, it makes it challenging for people to be transparent and open.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that one. You know, it's interesting what's going on with Trump right now. I have been following that story. We talked about it on the show for quite some time. My personal opinion is I don't think the Republicans are organized well enough to vote him into office. I think he will very definitely get the nod in terms of the candidate. I don't think there is any doubt of that, at least not in my mind. But to be voted in as president, I really don't think that's going to happen. And I don't mean with that statement that I don't support the guy. I'm just saying because I do support him. There you go, you guys. We'll be back next week.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.